Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Law of the Jam, the podcast. Once again, I am Lucas Hand here filling in for Robert and Shap with a bonus midweek trade deadline preview episode. I'm joined once again by my good friend Mike Jaglin. Mike, how are you doing?
A Jaguar.
I'm good. I'm good. We're 1 week away, you know?
1 week away. And it's going to be a busy week. It's going to be a busy, busy week. It always is before the trade deadline. And especially now that the NBA has moved up this deadline to being right after the Super Bowl. And, you know, these front office guys, the same thing happens in the 4th of July during the offseason. People want to go to Super Bowl parties. And so calls don't get made on Sunday afternoon. And that just even further compresses that, like, Monday through Thursday timeline of a lot of stuff happening.
The thing I love, too, about this trade deadline for the Clippers is that, you know, you've been playing a lot of these games, especially without Paul George and recently without Bev. So you're going to be able to possibly add another piece or a rotation piece before the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. So you'll have that entire post-All-Star break to get things kind of, you know, it headed in the direction that you need. And throughout all of these injuries and load management, I feel confident saying that come All-Star break, this team will have a grip on that two seed. I mean, it might be a game or two, but I think that's where we're headed. And knowing that you can add someone else that will be an upgrade, and I think that's what we're trying to hit at, Lucas, is an upgrade. And giving this Clippers team another piece that you feel comfortable in the rotation, in the playoffs, if it's an 8 or 9 man rotation, and that can make a difference. So, I mean, to further ado, should we jump into the names that I think you've hit on all of your columns? I think Clipper Nation has done 50,000 trade machines. let's go down the list. Let's start at realistic clip targets. Let's do that, right?
Okay. All right, Mike, who's your favorite realistic guy?
It's Marcus Morris. Marcus Morris is my number one realistic guy, just from the standpoint that he is an upgrade offensively over Harkless. Yes, he is probably more than a 4 than a 3, but he plays tough defense. He's playoff tested. He's a guy that I think in the second unit too, he can really pick up a lot of that slack. And you know, for any load management games or PG injury is to linger, you feel more than comfortable with Marcus Morris heading forward. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I guess I would say my reservations about Marcus Morris maybe have less to do with him and more to do with what you're not getting if you get him, right? Because, and I totally understand, we talk about the need at center is more severe, but there's not as realistic of targets for what the Clippers need in that slot. And what you get from Marcus Morris is a guy who's shooting 44% from three on a high volume. He's averaging 19 points. He fits right in at the power forward position as the upgrade that the Clippers need. But what I feel concerned about, I guess, with Morris is you talk about needing a guy for the playoff rotation, and Morris is absolutely a playoff rotation guy for the Clippers. But he's not someone who you're super comfortable with sliding over into that small ball five slot. And I guess when push comes to shove, you're going to want Kawhi Leonard playing at the four, right? So you bring Morris in as the power forward, and he's the guy who's sort of, he plays a lot of power forward minutes. Kawhi slides over to power forward in small ball lineups, and it works. But it doesn't make quite the same impact, I think, as getting someone who's actually going to be a part of that closing lineup. And I don't know if Morris is that guy for the Clippers. I think they'll still probably go with Beverly, either Shamit or Lou Williams, maybe offense defense subs there, and then George and Leonard at the two forward slots.
And Lucas, you bring up a great point, because I feel like the
The Clippers' two biggest needs at this deadline are that center or probably backup point guard slot. If we have a backup point guard, that you got a great theory that Jerome started that game last week because they're trying to figure out what would happen if we did bring in more of a facilitator, a la DJ Augustin.
I think the concern for the Clippers at point guard right now, sorry to cut you. I think the concern for the Clippers at point guard right now is that I think they, when they're healthy, they feel fine, right? Like Pat Beverly is the guy. I don't think there's a lot of questions about his capability. I know stuff has been floated, but like, I think that they have faith in Pat Beverly to be the guy. And I think that they're fine with Lou Williams running the offense on the second unit while Pat sits, especially because that's not going to be very many minutes in the playoffs anyway. I think what's concerning is if Pat Beverly rolls an ankle, if Pat Beverly picks up two fouls early in the first quarter, then what do you do? And we've seen the Clippers in the last 3 weeks kind of rotate, right? They started Derek Walton Jr. for a game when Pat was out. Do you remember what game that was? It was the game that we got blown out by the Memphis Grizzlies, right? Not a great sign. They started Terrence Mann this last week, and Mann was less than invisible on the court. You know, he did nothing. They started Jerome Robinson. Team struggled immediately out of the gate offensively. And so I think they're in a position where they feel like I honestly think the Clippers' best emergency point guard is play Landry Shamet at point guard and let Kawhi Leonard bring it up, which is what they did in that game against Miami where they were able to be successful. But, yeah, I think that maybe less looking for a rotation guy at point guard, because if they're healthy, I don't think a guy like DJ Augustin is necessarily going to play much. But I think they need an emergency point guard.
And I agree with you on that. And also, you talking about the Landry Shamet factor, his resurgence makes the offense that much better in regards to that point guard having to be a table setter. His motion by itself already is another distraction to a defense. So having him playing, even if he's not hitting shots like he has been, but moving like he has been, will make things easier for everyone on the court. Therefore, you won't need that backup point guard to play those solid minutes as much. But I agree. I think that, you know, when I'm thinking point guard, and let's just get through point guards before I keep on going down my realistic list, would be a DJ Augustin. But does he make sense, like you said, because he's not going to get that time? Probably not. Probably at that price tag. I think he's around Mo Harkless's rate.
No, he's a little bit less, but he's right at that $7 million range, similar to a guy like Langston Galloway, who I'm sure you're probably about to bring up. They make enough that you have to kind of give something back to get them, but you're not. They're guys that if they were at $3 or $4 million and you could just swap Jerome and a second round pick for them, boom, done. But at seven, you start thinking, man, we're having to piece some stuff together, and that means we're taking away potential salary pieces that could be added to Harkless to kind of facilitate maybe that Marcus Morris trade, and it starts getting a little bit more messy.
And that's why I think the buyout market's probably where they're going to end up. Yeah. I mentioned on the last cast, I really think Delly is probably a guy, and that's fine. A guy like Delly would be fine for this team. Ish Smith would be another guy. We're not looking for world beaters here. We're just looking for guys that, you know, will play that backup role. You can plug and play here and there for 10 or 20 minutes. And guys like Delly and Ish Smith, even though they're not sexy and people don't necessarily love them, they are capable of doing something.
I will say, Mike, though, that, right, we talk about like DJ Augustin and Ish Smith and Langston Galloway, and none of these guys are perfect players or even necessarily great players. No. But you know what you're getting. But I mean, Matthew Dellavedova is shooting 16% from three this year. Like, this is not. I don't know that he's. I think once you get down to Dellavedova, I'm saying just play Landry Shamet there and let Kawhi bring it up.
But that also goes back to our point of the market for point guards and centers. Is pretty grim. Yeah. I mean, that's the problem. And you and I in our Cliff Chat boys, I feel like we have a lot of these conversations and we have a lot of these kind of trade machine pipe dreams. But then we look at them and we're like, I don't think that this team will do this, or you know what, you and I were talking about, like, I don't like that person, or you know I don't know if this person's a true point guard, and then we come to a conclusion that, oh, there really aren't many options out there.
Yeah. And it's just weird, right? Because it's like, if there was a Marcus Morris point guard, or a Marcus Morris, like someone, Marcus Morris's caliber of player on his contract, in his situation with the Knicks where he's likely to be traded, but he played center instead of power forward, it would be amazing for the Clippers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But that's just not what the landscape is right now.
Transitioning to realistic, great segue, by the way, Andre Iguodala, he could be that ball handling facilitator. Wouldn't you agree?
I think in the situation where a guy like Beverly is hurt or is in foul trouble, Iguodala helps. But I got to tell you, man, the more we get into this, the more I'm worried about a guy who, like, literally has not been on his team for the entire year. Like Iggy's in LA doing studio shows.
Yep.
I just don't know. I don't know, you know, a guy with his injury history coming in at 36, I guess, you know, the Clippers have better intel than we do on the extent to which he's been training this year, but he's kind of been talking about this like it's a year off. Right. And I'm hesitant to say that he's the guy who you want to use the Harkless contract on in a trade. I'm hesitant to say that using the Harkless contract for a point guard is what you want to go for anyway. I just don't know. I think if you really get to the deadline, and let's say Morris falls through and a lot of these other deals fall through, and you look at it and you say, all right, well, we can go get Iggy for Harkless.
Without giving a pick. Yeah.
Well, you're going to have to at least give a second round pick. You're not going to get
that's what I mean, but I'm saying
up.
No first round pick though. I'm not giving up a first round pick for Andre Iguodala.
Yeah, if you get to 2:59 p.m. Eastern time next Thursday, and there's just no trade has materialized, then maybe you start thinking, okay, well, let's just flip Harkless for Iggy, and you know, I think that's better than standing pat with Harkless. But I also think that should be an extreme fallback option for the Clippers. And I think that Iggy is going to get moved at this deadline. So I don't really see that lining up between these two teams, because I think the Clippers need to have their set sight higher than Iguodala. And I think the Grizzlies are going to move him. It's not going to be a, okay, we'll take this Clippers deal or nothing's out there. Like that, there's going to be a deal done for Andre Iguodala at some point.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is Willie Cauley-Stein going to the Mavericks, which I kind of cringed at, because I did, like, you know, in one of my worst case scenario, mm-hmm. you know, clip fallbacks, getting Cauley-Stein. But them not giving up that Warrior pick is basically a first round pick now. So now if the Mavericks want to, they can basically unload that Courtney Lee deal, right? And the second round pick for Iggy.
Yeah. I also think we may have talked about this last week. You look at Dallas, it's got 20-year-old Luka, 24-year-old Kristaps, both locked up long-term. They are not even at the start of their window yet. It does not make sense to me for them to send a draft asset for a 36-year-old, especially because if the Clippers trade for Andre Iguodala, he probably resigns here next summer because the Clippers are a contender. If Dallas trades for Andre Iguodala, he probably leaves to go ring chase over the summer, don't you think? Like, I don't think he stays. He goes back to Golden State. You know what I mean? Like, why not? Steph is going to be back. Clay's going to be back.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that giving up that the really high-valued Golden State second round pick that's going to be like either pick 31 or 32. I don't think that makes sense for Dallas, but maybe they do.
Well, I don't think it makes sense, but I also feel like Dallas hasn't been in the playoffs for like probably four or five years, and Cuban is Cuban. That they might think that's my theory. Is Don? I always feel like Donnie Nelson and Cuban struck out for all of these years after being successful, and now they have a good young nucleus. They're playing. I do think that this team that team is has been overachieving. Their role players have been playing phenomenal this year. But this isn't Mav, you know, Maverick talk. But I agree with you. But I could just see it happening.
Yeah,
I see it being a move.
The Dallas is probably going to end up being like the five or the six, and I could see them. I could see Cuban having the kind of mindset like it's worth giving up this draft pick to give us better odds at winning a playoff series this year. Like if they're gonna be playing against Utah, like I can see that. All right, let's get back to who else do you have on your realistic list?
Marvin Williams. Now you brought him up last week. I loved the idea. He's kind of I think he kind of falls under that last second type of deal too.
Yeah, and unlike Iggy, who I think will be gone. Marvin Williams is a guy who will be there, like may, not guaranteed, but he's a guy that's not being talked about, that is not as highly sought after by contenders. He will probably be there at 2:59 p.m., and the Hornets, I think, would jump at the chance to get maybe even Harkless straight up for him, honestly. And the Clippers might even get a second-round pick back in that deal. But I think Marvin's a guy who could help.
The Malik Monk factor. I know New York is one of the teams that's kind of been looking into that because Charlotte does have they paid Rozier. You have Graham playing phenomenal, so they're going to have to pay him eventually. So where does that leave Monk? Leaves Monk the odd man out. So
yeah, I wonder is Monk good enough for that to be a concern though? I guess I'm not super high on Malik Monk. Like, I'm not sure that he's a starter. And so for them...
I don't think he's a starter, but I think he's a rotation piece, especially off the bench to shoot.
Yeah, but I think they could probably re-sign him to be the third guard, right? I don't see why that would...
You got Graham and
Rozier starting. You re-sign Monk to be the third guard. Similar to the role he's playing this year, right? 20 minutes a game off the bench with Graham and... backhand Graham and Rozier. I could see why Malik Monk, because right of his draft position and all that, might want a bigger role than that. But I don't know where he's getting it in the NBA until he starts playing a little bit better.
Getting back to Marvin Williams, I do love that idea. I do think that's a last minute deal. I also think it's a deal that could be a possible buyout target.
I agree. Yeah.
There's a couple guys on this list. I didn't put him on this list, but Taj Gibson's another possible buyout target.
Mm-hmm.
He's not on our list, but that's Marvin's one of those kind of could go both ways. Next on my list is realistics. We hit the Augustin, so we're good with that. Dwayne Dedman. I'm not a Dedman guy, not for that money. I'm not signing up for that.
Yeah,
I don't think he moves the needle at all. I mean, what do you think?
I'm not super high on Dedman either. I think he has, you know, this Sacramento thing is a bit of an anomaly. He comes back, but ultimately I'm not sure that he actually gives you a better player than Zubats or Harrell. Maybe if you're in a situation where you loot, you know, if Trez leaves in free agency and the Clippers need a backup, Dedman is a guy who can come in and play, and I think he'll be fine. I don't think he'll be as bad as he's been in Sacramento. But he's not a guy that you're thinking, oh, this solves the Clippers' problem where they need a center who's capable of closing games. And that contract that you say, it's not a good contract by any means, $13 million a year this year and each of the next two. But I also think the Clippers are in a position where – they have some assets to go make a deal, but they don't have like a full cupboard. Like, you know, basically the Paul George deal, the Clippers had everything that you could possibly want to go make a deal. You have a young stud rookie point guard. You've got a fringe all-star player in Gallinari on an expiring deal. You've got a bunch of draft picks to send, including the draft picks, like the one that you just got in the Harkless trade and all of that. So they were in a great position to go make a huge trade at that point. Now the Clippers have a couple assets to go make a medium level deal, but one of the ways that they could try to add talent is by taking on a bad contract, right? And so, you know, I know we're not there yet, but this is where, like, we talked about Chris Paul before. We probably won't get into that today, this is where a guy like Al Horford could come in, where the Clippers, if Al Horford was on a one-year deal, the Clippers would not have the assets to go get a player of his caliber. It's only because he's on a four-year deal that it's feasible. I think Dedmon is a guy who's in that conversation where, yeah, you and I both agree he doesn't change the team's ceiling really, but also, again, Sacramento would probably give you a second-round pick to swap Harkless for Dedmon. So you're not worried about giving up additional assets in that deal.
No, which is true. It's just Dwayne Dedmon just he doesn't do it for me. He doesn't do it. I not to sound like a spoiled Clipper fan because of the team we have this year, but I want guys that I know that are going to help put us over the top. Or if we're going to take on a contract, it better be a guy that's some kind of like, you know, low risk, high reward. You know what I mean? Like that has like given a team's kind of given up that we have. I have him. You just know. You just hit on him, Al Horford. He's on the next tier of not too far out of Clipper reach. We don't know exactly if Philly wants to get rid of him. We have heard rumblings that they want Gallo. So if they want Gallo, they would have to ship Al out somewhere, you would think. I agree with you. This would make this Clipper team, I think they win the championship this year, hands down. Not to sound cocky, but I think that is he's the answer. Am I wrong?
I'm with you 100%. You know that I have been on the Al Horford train since last summer, and I think, yeah, I mean, I think you're right. Nothing is guaranteed, right? There's no even if the Clippers could make us like a even bigger than Horford level acquisition at this deadline, there's no guarantee that you're going to win a championship. You don't know what's for, even injuries aside, you don't know what's going to happen in a 7-game series against the Lakers, against Philadelphia, against Milwaukee, right? But I do think that getting a guy like Al Horford puts the Clippers, like right now the Clippers are maybe, I think the Clippers are sort of considered the favorites, but still you would take the field over them, right? Like that's kind of how the betting books have been.
I think right now they'd probably be three, you know, just Milwaukee being off of that. And then the Lakers, just the Laker machine in general.
I think if you get Horford, you start pretty much becoming the clear cut favorites to win the title this year. And I had a comment on the blog that said, the team is going to have a future too. We can't go all in on the Paul George, Kawhi Leonard core. And I kind of thought to myself, I was like, listen, I just don't think the front office agrees with that point of view. You have a situation where you've got Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on the roster and you've got them for 2 years and then they can leave. And with Kawhi's injury, who knows how long he's going to play, even if he stays, right? You have a very limited window. And I just think, you have a chance to go get a guy like Al Horford, who is, in my opinion, is going to make you the clear-cut best team in the league, favorites to win the title. I mean, you and I watched, right, this Philadelphia versus Lakers game last week and saw Horford playing against the, like, LeBron James, Anthony Davis pick and roll. And he's not by any means like an Anthony Davis stopper, but he gives you a level of trust in those defensive situations. Uh-huh. That is nowhere to be found on the Clippers roster right now. The Clippers may be good enough to win despite not having that, but if they get that, they will be, I think, at another level as a team.
And not to mention, you know, like, offensively, he's a better passer than Zubats and Harrell. He is, I'm not saying that we'll move both of them or one of them. He's a better outside shooter.
Yeah.
He just makes, he's not sexy. He's just very good and reliable. You know, he's like a very dependable Toyota. It's not sexy, but you know he has miles on him. He's going to get you from point A to point B. He's not going to get you in many accidents. You know what I mean? You know what you're getting with this guy. And sure, the back end of the contract is bad. I think the last year team option.
It's a partial guarantee the last year. But you know what's funny actually is the last year becomes fully guaranteed if he wins a championship.
Well, there you go.
So I think at that point we're not complaining, right?
No, no. And you and I and Clipper fans before PG, and we in the summer, leading up to Kawhi, we all thought that it was probably could have been Horford and Kawhi.
Yeah.
And now, you actually have the Sixers in a weird spot that they're, they have a log jam and a lack of shooters. This might be the time. That is the upgrade if you're going to make a move. And, getting back to if Trez is in the deal or not, I don't want to lose Trez either, but we have to also come to grips, which I think as fans we don't do enough of, is – realizing that he is a free agent at the end of the year. He is with Clutch. And also, we overvalue a lot of our own players. You're getting – not to take away from ever anything Trez has done for our team or what he, embodies, at getting Al Horford, you know what you're getting,
Yeah. I think it's the opposite of what we were just talking about with Dedmon, where you don't really know, let's say he bounces back to his form in Atlanta. That would be great, but he's still not great. He's a solid player that does some stuff, but also has some weaknesses. And we don't know how that kind of, he did play in the playoffs with San Antonio, but that was almost, it was a totally different style, totally different system. And he wasn't shooting threes at that point in his career when he was in San Antonio. But Horford is a guy what you are going to get out of him, and you know that he's going to help you win night in and night out. And the other thing about Horford is one of the things we talk about with Marcus Morris is a guy that, is he going to help the is he going to make this kind of sticky isolation offense problem the Clippers have even worse? I'm just going to tell you two numbers, which is for Marcus Morris, his usage rate is 24%. And his assist rate, which is the number of baskets made by his teammates when he's on the floor, what percentage of those baskets does he assist? So his usage rate is 24%. His assist rate is 7%. Al Horford's usage rate is 18%. And his assist rate is 19%. So of all the shots that the other four guys on the floor make while Horford is playing, he assists on 19% of them. And that's actually down from when he was in Boston, because we know Philly has some offensive spacing issues this year. Horford is a guy who moves the basketball. He helps your offense run smoothly. I mean, as a big man, he's averaging 4 assists a game. And again, that's down from his time in Boston. So he's a guy who you can trust to not only make shots in the mid-range and from the 3-point line and help space the floor for you offensively and play defense better than any of the Clippers' current options, but he helps that offense move. As another guy who makes smart reads, you can run your offense out of Horford in the high post, which is not something you can say about Zubats or Harrell.
Yeah, and he's another guy too that masks that backup point guard. I mean, he's not a point forward but because of his passing ability and his IQ level, he will, like you said, make that extra pass, keep the ball moving, take the right shots.
He's not gonna bring the ball up for you, of course, but he's a guy where if, let's say, we're in this kind of scenario that we talked about where Beverly rolls his ankle and the Clippers don't have an emergency point guard that they trust, and so they're playing like Shamit, Paul George, and Kawhi at the 1, 2, and 3 and having those guys kind of bring it up by committee, Horford is a guy who, once you get down and settled into your offense, he will help keep things moving in a way that, which is crucial when you don't have a point guard on the floor. That Trez, Zubats is not much of a passer, and Trez, we know, gets the ball and looks straight at the rim and almost never passes, right? Horford's a guy who will help the offense move, which again is going to be even more important in the playoffs when the game is slower, when the defenses are better, when the scouting is better. I think it's a no-brainer. If you can go get him, I think you go get him.
I agree. I think out of all the names on our list, and I think this is probably a less than 50% deal, but who knows? I mean, who knows what the front office can do? Who knows what, Philly might want to get out of this contract, and they know they need shooting. Yeah, so this might be
Simmons,
the
Horford, and Embiid don't work together. Those three guys just like the floor does not work with those three guys all playing together.
And then you add Simmons, who's a big guy too, even though he has the ball. And that's the other thing. Horford doesn't get the ball, touch the ball as much because of the spacing issues, and because you have Simmons and Embiid.
Yeah, and so, I think that's the answer to anyone who says, "Oh, well, Horford's having a bad year." Like, yeah,
everyone
on Philadelphia is having a bad year. Like, everyone on Philadelphia's shooting numbers are down this year because they don't have their roster construction is bad, which is why
it is very bad.
Which is why I think that they might look for deals for a guy like Horford, because they've been doing a little bit better recently. Like, it's ironic to say because Embiid has been out, and of course he's either their best or second best player with Ben Simmons, right? But the offense has looked a little bit better recently for Philadelphia because they've been playing like that. You know, you put in even a guy like Raul Neto in the game, who's not at the same caliber as these other guys for the Sixers, but who will just hit open shots at a high clip, and you take out a tall guy, and all of a sudden the game opens up a little bit. And I think they realize that they need to restructure their roster in such a way that you bring in a guy, maybe it's Gallinari who they've targeted, maybe it's somebody else, but the guy who's going to space the floor, who's going to play make on the perimeter and open up the game, and it's going to make everybody else a little bit better. All right, so you might have something else to say about Horford, and you can, but I think we should also probably move past a little bit, because I know I've been a little Horford obsessed in the last few days. Well, you also have these Detroit guys that you're interested in. What do you think about that?
I agree with you, but hashtag horny for Horford.
Oh,
okay, that's
God.
What I want to do. Horny for Horford. That's what we need.
That was okay,
Mike. If he gets traded, yes, I love. See, you got to play the room. Okay, Detroit. Look, we've heard Detroit's a dumpster fire. We know that.
Yeah.
There's Drummond, but we know he's too much and not worth it, probably for us. Derek Rose. No, I don't like it. Which gets us to some interesting. Again, I think this falls under our last minute deals. Langston Galloway, and Markieff Morris. That could be a package that comes to the Clippers. It's not sexy, but it helps with depth. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I think these guys. I know Tony Snell is a guy who makes a little bit more money, but he's another guy. I think that these are the kinds of players, and this is what I was talking about with Augustine earlier when I mentioned Galloway. I'm glad we're coming, just kind of circling back to it, where they help. They do help. But when guys start getting into Galloway's at $7 million, Augustine's at $7 million, Snell is at $11 million, you start thinking the Clippers just don't have the contracts to move that make – I think when you move Harkless, you need a guy who's going to be able to be on the floor as one of your main eight guys in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I think even a guy like Marvin Williams, you could say, might fit in there in a way that I'm just not sure that these other guys will. And actually what's interesting to me is that of those three guys, the guy who maybe is most interesting to me is Markieff Morris, because he plays power forward, so he's kind of slots in there, and he's shooting the ball really well this year, 39.5% from three. So it's a great year for the Morris brothers. And he's only at $3.2 million this season. So it's a lot easier to figure out what the trade would be for him without saying, we're going to have to piece together two guys to go get a $7 million Galloway, or we're going to have to send out Harkless to go get the $11 million deal for Snell. The problem with Markieff Morris is I'm not sure that he's a guy who's in that eight-man playoff rotation, to be frank. He shoots the ball better than a Mo Harkless, but that's also this is an outlier year for him for sure. So I don't know if that's a shot that you trust him to make in the playoffs at the same rate. And I think overall as a player, I don't think he's as good as Mo Harkless. especially with what Mo brings in terms of defensive versatility. So I would almost think that Markieff might be a guy that you target in a follow-up deal as you're trying to shore up your rotation. If the Clippers make a trade where they send out a couple of these, like they might send out Harkless and Patterson, and then maybe you say, okay, well, can we go flip, like, can we flip maybe Jerome and a second to go get Markieff Morris as a guy who can come in and just be sort of a depth piece, a ninth or tenth man, play some regular season minutes, and then be – I think what the problem with the Clippers with a lot of these deals that we're talking about is they end up in a situation where you've got like a really strong eight or nine man rotation, but as soon as someone rolls an ankle or picks up two fouls early in the first quarter, you're turning to someone in the like cluster of Derek Walton Jr., Jerome Robinson, Terrence Mann, Amir Coffey, Fiondu Cabangele, or Jonathan Motley. None of those six guys should see the court in the playoffs, really. So
no, and it's,
that's where they need to go get a couple of guys that can provide depth as like guys maybe 10 and 11 or guys 9 and 10 behind that strong eight-man rotation. Mm-hmm. Because I think, honestly, right now those guys are like Roddy McGruder, who already has – the Clippers need an upgrade over McGruder, right? Anyway, and maybe Patrick Patterson could be that guy if he doesn't end up being traded. But that's where I sort of see Markieff Morris fitting in, is not as an upgrade over Harkless, but as a guy who you can go and say, all right, we're going to play a nine-man rotation in the playoffs, and Markieff Morris is our 10th man.
And I totally agree with you, because you and I have talked about this. Like, as good as a Clipper bench might be on paper, there's a lot of flaws. I mean, Magruder's underperformed. Jerome's underperformed. Outside of like Lou and Trez, and I mean, Patterson's been there. Patterson he was their best free agent pickup. I mean, on the minimum, where would we be without Patrick Patterson?
I think Kawhi Leonard might have been the Clippers' best free agent pickup.
Outside of Kawhi Leonard, I mean, out of like I'm talking about like the bench squad guys, because when they play these games, like the loss in Atlanta, I can go with a handful of these games. It's the lack of consistency from the Rodney Magruders, from the Terrence Manns, from the Jerome Robinsons, that have killed this team. And sure, you don't need that in the playoffs, but like you said, like, you might need in one of the, say you're playing five or seven game series with these teams, you might need one of those role players in one game to get you 10 points or to play more valuable minutes. So
you are not going to get, you are not going to win the four straight playoff series that you need to win only relying on eight guys.
Exactly.
You are not going to
exactly.
And I mean, we saw the year that the Clippers blew that 3-1 lead to Houston, and I'm sorry for even bringing it up, but remember Austin Rivers started like the first two or three games of that series because Chris Paul had a hamstring issue. But because the Clippers had a guy like Austin Rivers, who is by no means a world beater, although I am a fan of Austin's, but he's not a world beater. He's not a starting caliber NBA point guard, but he's a guy that could slot in and you could survive with him and him playing there. And I think those six guys that I listed for the Clippers, who are sort of the like either the like prospects / two-way guys, those kind of group, I don't think any of them are in a position where you feel like, oh, we can survive with those guys playing in the playoffs. And that's where the Clippers
none of them are. And we've seen it. The proof's been in the pudding.
Yeah.
I mean, we would be easily the number two seed, arguably probably like a game if behind the Lakers, if we had one or two of those types of guys.
If Roddy McGruder was as good this year as he was last year for Miami, I think that would make a lot of difference for the Clippers, because they would be able to rely on him in the, you know, Doc Rivers wouldn't be closing games with Patrick Patterson at small forward because we need someone out there who can hit a shot. You know what I mean? Happened against Atlanta.
We're coming. We've got another like 5 minutes or so.
Yeah.
I want to hit a couple more things. First off, I think you brought up a great point,
And I think the underlying things as Clipper fans we have to look at as we get through, well, I'm going to talk about more names in a second, is this piece going to make a difference in the rotation in the playoffs? And could this piece potentially be in the final play at the end of the game? I think that's what we all have to look at, right? Is our two main criteria. Yeah. And then those two criteria, you got to be in one of those two. And then can you come in and play minutes, you know, via, you know, if you're a Markieff Morris or a buyout guy, or Taj Gibson.
Yeah, those are kind of the three tiers of impact, right? Is it like, okay, yeah. Is this guy a, like, closing lineup in the playoffs level guy? Is he
Al Horford,
right, is in there for sure. Is he a, he's part of that 8 or 9 man playoff rotation kind of guy? Or is he a
– Morris, Marvin Williams.
Sure, yeah.
Iggy.
Or yeah. Is he a, he's going to bring you depth and be a little bit better than the current third string guys throwing some of the rolls at ankle. And that's where you get Markieff Morris. That's where you get, if the Clippers go make a trade with Golden State to go get a guy like Glenn Robinson III, who's on a 1 year minimum deal. He's not going to stay in Golden State next year. So you flip a second for him as a rental. He comes in and he's just, basically he does what Roddy McGruder does for the Clippers. He's just not quite as bad as Roddy McGruder, right?
Exactly.
He doesn't play in the playoffs until you need someone who is 6'6 and can hit a 3-point shot at the 2 or the 3 to play 12 minutes, and he's there, and he does that better than Jerome Robinson can.
A few more names of the not too far out of reach. We talked about Robert Covington. Yeah. I don't know what happens with Covington.
I think he ends up being out of the Clippers' price range. That's my feeling is because of that 3-year affordable deal, and I'll be quick, because of that 3-year affordable deal in Minnesota, they don't have a need to trade him. They can trade him next deadline. They can trade him the deadline after. There's no urgency there. And so if they don't get a really good deal, and we think about how teams tend to do like an expiring and a first-round pick for a better player, with the level that Covington is at, I think it either has to be a good first-round pick, like better than this Clippers 2020 pick that's going to be pretty late, or it has to be like maybe 2 first-round picks or a first-round pick and one of those really valuable second-rounders or something. I don't think the Clippers have the pieces there. But, okay, next name. Go on.
Okay, Drummond we talked about. We're both going to say pass on.
Yeah, hard pass on Drummond.
An interesting name we didn't hit on last week, and I don't think we're going to trade for him, but he is a buyout guy. But from what I'm hearing, Boston would probably snag him in a second, is Tristan Thompson. He is a clutch client. But he would be perfect – I think if we could get him as a buyout. I don't think you trade for him, but just I think as a name to keep an eye on. Again, a lot of these names that Lucas and I are talking about are all names you're going to hear this week. We're just trying to basically identify what is realistic and what isn't, which gets me to the unrealistic. I'll start with the Toronto guys. Serge Ibaka, this is you were gung-ho for, I want to say, for an entire weekend on figuring out a way to get Serge Ibaka. And I think the only way that you realistically thought about it is if he got shipped somewhere. And
yeah,
it's
the same with Al Horford, right? Where with a team like Toronto or Philadelphia that's in a really strong position to contend for a championship this year, they're not going to take the Clippers odds and ends. But if one of those teams feels like they want to go make an upgrade at the deadline and Gallinari could be a target for either of them, then Ibaka, who's playing backup center for them and is on
expiring.
They could say, we're going to flip Ibaka for a guy who we think is going to have a bigger impact in our rotation in the playoffs. Same thing with Philadelphia. They could say, we're going to flip Horford for a guy who we think is going to kind of free up our offense and have a bigger impact in the playoffs. Let me ask you this. Deals, whatever the trade is aside, who do you think makes the Clippers better this year if they get Ibaka or Horford?
Horford.
Interesting. I think Ibaka.
I know what I'm getting with Al. Not that I don't know what I'm getting with Serge. I feel that there's a certain level of comfort, and I love Serge. Don't get me wrong. And I think with this team, he fits in really well. They both do. But I think that Al's IQ in consistency is a little more than Ibaka's.
if that makes sense. He's been the guy. Al had to be one of the, you know, top one or two guys on his team, you know, for five plus years.
Yeah, I mean, Al Horford's a five-time All-Star, right? Like, there's a pedigree there that even Serge, with his – Serge has also had a very accomplished career, but it's a little different.
It's a little different, and it's not – you know what you're getting with Al. With Serge, you're going to have kind of that in-between, like, playing minutes, and then, oh, he just erupted for 15 points and 10 boards. Oh, he made a big defensive play. With Horford, he's just going to be like the silent assassin that you know what you're going to get. He's going to calm the storm. Serge is an upgrade, and I would take him in a heartbeat. I just feel that Al Horford, you know exactly what you're getting. And I think with Doc Rivers too, that's a Doc Rivers type of guy. You know, he would feel happy playing a 33-year-old Al Horford out there for 35 minutes.
Okay, well,
he would.
Yeah, no, I mean, he is absolutely very much a Doc guy. He's one of those guys that Doc would trust, but also he wouldn't hurt the team. You know, he's totally the opposite of like the Paul Pierce situation. All right, we are at our time. Mike, do you have any final thoughts for this episode before we let go?
No, I think it's just important, Clipper Nation. Again, we have those three different tiers. And I agree. We'll talk one more time before the deadline, but they're going to make a move. I just feel that they're going to make a move.
Yeah, I would be really surprised if they don't make a trade. I think that Harkless is going to move. I would be surprised if Harkless is still on the team.
I totally agree. And Clipper fans, that's why I think we dove into all these different scenarios with these guys, because you have to look at how these guys fit. Again, you're fans. You're not freaking front office people. So just because his name is Andre Iguodala doesn't mean he's Andre Iguodala from 5 years ago. We have to be able to look at, like, what this player will do now, what to realistically expect from. And the Clippers' goal is to win a title this year or next year. I agree, Lucas. This is a two-year window. So, yeah. You put some of these chips onto the table and you go for it at the deadline. You don't want to do anything stupid like Philly does, but you have to take advantage of this window.
Yeah, I think that's well put. I think this window is the Clippers are definitely going to go all in for the next 2 years, and I think that they should. I think it's the right choice. All right, that is going to
horny for Horford.
That is going to do it for this week's special trade deadline episode of the Law of the Jam podcast. Once again, I'm Lucas Han. I've been here with Mike Jaglin. Stay tuned for a normal episode of the Law of the Jam podcast with your normal hosts, Robert and Chap, coming this weekend. Also, stay tuned for 213 Hoops coming very, very soon. We are finalizing the last few things to get ready for our launch. We are getting contracts in from the contributors. It's going to be great. I'm really, really excited to share it with you guys. And of course, Mike and I will be back for one final trade deadline preview episode last week. The trade deadline is next Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern time. So we will probably have an episode for you on Wednesday. Maybe the Clippers will have made a deal by then. Maybe I'm certain whether they have or not, we will be flooded with rumors. So it's going to be a good time. We're looking forward to seeing you there.
Lucas, before I let you go, I kind of compare now the trade deadline of the Clippers almost like Christmas Eve. You know they're gonna do something. You just don't know, like,
you're just waiting
point.
To see what's so gonna be under the tree. And you
exactly.
know you know what the toys are on the market this year, but it could always be something that you haven't heard of. Yeah.
And that's why, like, Wednesday night, like, if we release on Wednesday, something's gonna happen. Something's gonna happen.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks for being here, Mike. Thank you guys all at home for listening, and you'll hear from us next week.